It was more about, here are the things that you should be considering in developing your own guidelines for your company or your newsroom. And those things centered around accuracy, context, clarity. You know, that was one category of things. And we had a list of questions that people should be looking at as they work through things like ChatGPT. We talked a lot about transparency and disclosure. Like, when do you tell the audience that you're using this tool? What is the right way to do that? How do you build trust with your audience? And obviously, transparency is a really big component of that.
Welcome to the News Nirvana podcast. I'm your host, Nick Parker. The News Nirvana podcast features conversations with media professionals from across the country, highlighting our ever-evolving business models and showcasing the strong and effective journalism produced each and every day. This podcast is made possible to you by the generosity of Blox Digital. Blox Digital empowers content producers to connect with their worldwide audiences at scale and continuously transform to achieve their business goals. Contact Blox Digital today to learn more about how they can help you thrive, and you can connect with them at BloxDigital.com. Hello and welcome back to the News Nirvana podcast. I'm your host, Nick Parker. Today we're talking about AI. It seems like this is the topic du jour lately for us. It just kind of pushed into almost every conversation that we had. I'm excited to have with me Colin Benedict, VP of News for Morgan Murphy Media, and Ethan Holland, the VP at Draper Digital Media. These two have been, well, they've been speaking everywhere lately. It seems like talking about AI in our newsrooms, how to use it, what's out there, a little bit of the ethics of use. So welcome to the show, guys.
Yeah, thanks for having us.
Good to be here.
Well, I think first and foremost, what are we excited about when people start talking about AI? What excites you about using these, you know, in our news organizations?
Yeah, I'll jump in. I think one of the things that I've talked with our teams about is how can we use this technology to really kind of take away the most mundane parts of our job, make it more efficient, allow us to work on the things that really bring joy to our journalists in our newsroom, and that is finding original stories and, you know, creating content. And, you know, so much of what we do in our local newsrooms, if you really think about it, like in a, you know, a broad sense of what we spend our time on in aggregate, there's a lot of tasks that are required in our newsrooms that aren't about creating original content. So we're really looking at it that way. Like, how could we use these tools to get rid of the most mundane, you know, sort of organizational parts of our job?
Right. Are you kind of following along those same lines, Ethan?
Yeah, for sure. I think the foundation is exactly the same. I think the potential is also fun to think about as things like plugins and some of the features that allow AI to crunch data on our behalf. It's fun to take a lot of information and have it come back with a summary or some bullet points that would have otherwise taken a long time to browse.
Yeah, I think that feeds right along with what Colin was saying is how can we cut out a bunch of the time? I mean, I've started to use it in my own organization of, you know, how can I rewrite something or how can I summarize and what takes 45 minutes down to like 5.
100%. I think that's where the opportunity lies for us. As we started to kind of craft guidelines around how we want to do this in our newsrooms. Some of the feedback I got from our staff was, number one, thanks for doing this. I'm glad that we're thinking this through and coming up with some, like, you know, ethical way of approaching this. But, you know, some of it, as we found in some of the use cases, which I'm sure we'll get into as we go down the path in this podcast, allowed our journalists to take tasks that were taking a half an hour and get them down to 5 to 7 minutes. And it didn't mean that we were sort of handing over the responsibility of our journalism to the AI. I mean, we're not going to do that, but we are going to use it as a tool and look to use it as a tool. But this is like the infancy, right? Like, we don't really know where this is all going to go. And what we're trying to do is say, let's experiment in this space, do it in a smart way, ethical way, and then and see where it takes us.
you just hit there on the this is still new. We don't know where it's going or what all is going to be possible in the future. But how important is it for us as an industry to be early adopters, to not be scared of jumping in and figuring this stuff out as it goes along? And you know, I've said many times over and over, we haven't always been an industry that jumps into the new technologies. So how important is it for us to do that this time?
Can I weigh in on this one?
Absolutely.
I think, so my analogy is it's like a new camera, right? So GoPros or Osmos, any kind of new tool, in order to use them in the field, you have to have practice with them. So I think for a very, like an immediate point of view, we've created an AI focus group internally of people that we pay for them to have the plus versions of ChatGPT and Midjourney. And we let them play with it as individuals, beyond not just as professionals, but just like you would want to use a camera before you were sent out to, in the field. We want everyone to understand what we're talking about, because getting everyone on the same page about the potentials, if you haven't used it, you're just philosophizing. So I think in order to make good decisions, we have to kind of know what it's capable of and kick the tires. So that's sort of the first step. And that's what we've done.
Well, let's dig in then a little bit on what are the tools? What are we talking about using right now? What are some of those AI tools that we can dig out of the toolbox or add to our toolbox?
Well, for us, I think ChatGPT, like most people, is the big one. We want to know how things like stable diffusion technology work, so we understand the conflicts and copyright issues and using it is important. We don't employ any sort of stable diffusion or image generation in-house. But for things like maybe a contest promotion on a radio station, if you want to get an illustration of a crab on a beach, you know, drinking a beer, you can have some pretty fun things for illustrators. And we're giving these tools to our illustrative teams. So we're looking at it as boosters for people's existing jobs to give them more tools and more power. And so for me, ChatGPT is one. The Midjourney is another, and then some voice type stuff like 11 Labs, again, just for familiarity. But as far as in practice, I think ChatGPT is by far the big one.
That's where we're at as well. You know, we're really trying to lean into, I mean, and that's the big sort of sea change here. I mean, we've been using some level of artificial intelligence for other things, but then when these large language models and ChatGPT comes along, it kind of opens the door to different possibilities we haven't considered before. So that's what we're trying to kind of really experiment with in our newsrooms. I will say on the video side, we are spending time in our organization, this is outside of news, but in the sales realm, using a product called Waymark, which is essentially an artificial intelligence tool that allows us to create sales videos in a pretty rapid pace based on kind of like scraping information, images, video from like a small business's website. So gives us an opportunity to walk into a small business and almost, you know, be in position to pitch them what a commercial could look like without having to, you know, do all the spec work ahead of time. So we haven't figured out how to use that in news or even if it has an application on the news side, but there's lots of different ways that we can influence our business that, go beyond the journalism part of it too.
Once again, that's a time saver tool.
Totally.
Right. Well, let's just focus on ChatGPT for a second, because I think you're right. That's the one kind of the top of everybody's mind. It's the easy entry point. What are some ways that newsrooms can utilize that? Because I can't tell you how many times people said, well, yeah, I downloaded it, but what do I do?
Yeah.
How do I put this to use?
So we've worked through a few use cases. So let me kind of get a little bit of background on sort of what we're comfortable with doing in our newsrooms from a ethical and, you know, a standpoint, because I think it'll give context to how we're starting to implement this within our organization. So we took a step back and worked with our news director group and looked at some industry guidelines and basically said, like, what are we comfortable with? Like, and we tested a couple of different use cases for ChatGPT in particular. And essentially, we landed in this space where if we were going to use a model like ChatGPT to modify our own original journalism, we were comfortable with that. So use cases could be things like taking a broadcast script and creating a first draft of a digital story, taking a broadcast script and giving suggestions on optimizing social posts, taking a broadcast script and making suggestions for a broadcast tease in a newscast. And so that's really where our energy has been focused. What we told our journalism teams we were not willing to do was to use it to create original material. So literally, like, here's a press release. I want you to write a story for me. In our, you know, experiment and experimentation and testing around that, it really just brought in a lot of, frankly, false information, inferences that weren't true, that, of course, we were always going to have the standard of having a journalist review any of this stuff before it gets to the consumer. But we just felt like it was introducing things that could essentially, you know, slip into stories that just weren't falsehoods. And, you know, maybe at some point these types of tools will advance to the point where we're more comfortable using it for something like that. But right now, our focus has been solely on kind of finding the efficiency in using a tool like this to repurpose or recast content that we have originally created.
I love that, and it fits with the other theme of our recent episodes on this podcast, which is repurposing content. How can you make the content that you already have work for all of the platforms that we all use now? Because none of us are just broadcast or just written word, right? We all have to do audio, video, written, everything, and it's just shared. How are you training your people to use the prompts to figure out what to say to repurpose that and get the best possible results? Because I think that's intimidating to a lot of people.
That part of it is. And, you know, we're still in the development stage of this. I think the next stage that I'm planning to tackle is doing exactly what you're talking about, which is how do I create and actually, you know, I think we've talked about this, you know, as a small group and said, how do we create prompts that work for some of these use cases and then share those prompts so that it's not like people aren't reinventing the wheel? Because I think it is somewhat intimidating. And of course, you know, the prompt and the way that it's worded and how specific it is really, really determines the value of the content that comes back to you. So that's my next plan, is to really kind of share those prompts across the group and then have them be able to experiment with it. I think the other thing that I've really focused on is you have to have sort of a coalition of the willing, right? You have to sort of empower the individuals who are interested in this naturally and give them the opportunity to experiment in the room to do it. For some people, it's not going to be something that excites them, and that's okay. Let's let the people that have interest in this lead the way and let them sort of discover what works and what doesn't.
Like anything else, early buy-in.
Totally.
Well, Ethan, I want to come over to you a little bit on that learning prompts kind of thing. So what do you suggest to people as far as learning what works and how you can ask this tool to spit out the information that you need?
Well, I like analogies. I would definitely compare this to a search engine. If you've ever watched another person search Google, you can either be absolutely infuriated by how bad they are or impressed with how slick their you know, Boolean logic operators were and exclusions. You can kind of, even with something as simple as a Google search, there's an array of use cases of how people apply it. So I think the best case with AI is to try it. I think in a weird way, it's intuitive. It is a little bit like Google, where you just kind of learn how to get what you want and how to get the signal from the noise. One thing I've noticed is some people, you know, they put in garbage, they get garbage out, and then they say that the tool stinks. I think having faith in the potential, like Colin said, it's the group of the willing. if you have faith that you can pull this thing off, if you just ask it the right questions, you'll keep trying. So in my mind, you know, I'll do something like, you know, I need your help, right? You know, reviewing something, a paragraph I wrote. Can you review it for me? But then you realize maybe it'll be helpful if you said, I'd like you to look at the grammar, or I'd like you to look at the spelling. So the more you speak to it like a person, and the more you give it, the more you get back. I've noticed, and I know your audience will have an array of abilities. So I think for the basic skills, that would be my answer, is talk to it like a person and give it as much information as you possibly can before you hit send. Some people are better than that than others. The other thing I would call out is the improvement of these chatbots is so often that the prompts, you don't need the same prompt week over week. So like, for example, I've had prompts that I've saved from a while ago and they no longer work because I was being too pedantic or too condescending and I just didn't need that. So I feel like this is literally one of those emerging technologies where you get a return on investment the more you use it. And having a friend, if you're not into it, having a friend sit down and show you, nothing beats looking at it.
Well, I would suggest not being condescending because, you know, just in case they take over, let's treat the robots kindly, right? Like I always say, please and thank you.
Me too, actually.
I want them to like me when they take over. What about, and I found as I've played around with it and trying to learn how to use it for myself, that even not being afraid to ask more. So it generates a response and then, well, now do this too, or now add this to it. Do you like that kind of pattern, or do you think it's more important to try to be more exact in your initial prompt?
I think it works both ways, honestly. You know, what we found, I was showing off a use case for this where I was showing our our weather folks, how we could take a video forecast and a transcript from a video forecast and then rework that into a digital story that would be accurate and valuable to the consumer. And so we went through a couple different versions of it, and I didn't like a couple of things, and I would add, you know, hey, this is written in third person. I'd love it to be written in first person using this meteorologist's voice. And so that was sort of a nice iteration of how, you know, we could develop the content, but I've seen it work both ways.
That's crazy to me that you can tell it to use a specific person's tone of voice.
Oh yeah.
I think that's what kind of makes my mind go a little nutty.
I would add to what Colin said that I don't mind stringing it along and refining. I do know it has a limit, which the limit's so big, I doubt I'd hit it anymore, but I try to get it where I want it. And then ChatGPT has the ability to edit any portion of the conversation and resume it at any point in the conversation. So essentially, once I get a conversation to where I like what it's outputting, rather than continuing the conversation, I will just hit the edit button and remove my last input and paste in something new so that the string kind of stays at the length that it is. And I'm just swapping out the inputs and I'm no longer stacking them linearly.
Oh, that's interesting. That's a good point. I did not realize that you could edit the prompts that way.
Yeah, and in disclosure, I am with the GPT-4 Plus. So if I say something that's not available, it's not meant to be on purposely obscure.
Well, that leads to I think a really good question. Like, we are not an industry known for being willing to spend money willy-nilly. Like, any new tool that you beg for, it's a hard sell to get the budget, right? So when you look at the free plans versus the plus plans, when should organizations look at making that switch, or do they need to go for the paid from the beginning? What are the differences between those?
Colin?
Yeah. I mean, so there are differences. It is a more elegant and refined product. There are the plugins that you can use on the paid plan for ChatGPT. What we've done is started with the free version, but that has its limitations. Like I was talking to one of our investigative reporters, and she had some data that she was trying to organize and really kind of find something very simple out of it. like, here's a list of addresses. I want to know how many of these addresses fall into a certain city in the state of Wisconsin where she is working. And it was struggling with that, you know, and, you know, something like that, you would think, as you look at the technology, you're like, oh, this should be like a piece of cake, you know, literally, instead of having the journalist was like, you know, I would take like these 500, you know, addresses and try to count how many of them are actually in this one particular city. So that use case for the free version didn't work very well. And we never tested it. I didn't actually go and test it on the paid version, but my suspicion is we would have had a little bit more success. So I think, you know, right now where we're at as a company, we're gonna have people on the paid version, not everyone. We're gonna try out, see what the differences are, and just experiment a little bit with it and try to understand, hey, you know, where are its limitations? And of course, those things are changing so rapidly too.
The News Nirvana podcast is made possible by the generosity of Blox Digital. Blox Digital empowers content producers to connect with their worldwide audiences at scale and continuously transform to achieve their business goals. Contact Blox Digital today to learn more about how they can help you thrive. Connect with them at BloxDigital.com.
Well, Ethan, since you're on the Plus plan, what have you noticed in differences there?
Well, I think the big difference with the Plus plan is it's a real sneak peek into where AI is headed as a trend. So I think if I was to compare them, I would say that the free plan is a chatbot. The Plus plan is a enabled, empowered agent that can go do stuff. So the ability to send ChatGPT out on the internet and come back with information. What's interesting to me about, and the free version versus Plus is a good way to talk about this. I think ChatGPT is so good at conversation that we think it's an expert. Because if I was at a cocktail party and I was talking about Python code and someone was able to just on a napkin do what ChatGPT could do, I would say, oh, well, you know Python. The problem is it's just intuiting these things. It's just kind of predicting what would come next, and it's a chatbot. With the Plus version, I believe the chatbot becomes an interface. So rather than having the chatbot do all the answering for me, the Plus version now, the chatbot is my interface where I ask it to go do stuff. It's an agent. It comes back and it's a conversational interface. So now that powerful cocktail party friend that I thought could code actually has another friend called a plugin that can code. And it's the intermediary between the two. So that to me is what, when I have a good example would be the Zillow plugin. That's not available on the free platform. But if I enable the Zillow plugin, I can say to ChatGPT, what's the most expensive house for sale right now in this zip code? ChatGPT stopped getting trained in 2021, I think. So it wouldn't know anything about my local area's data. But with a plugin, it can go hit Zillow, find the most expensive house. And if you're a realtor, I mean, we're talking news, but this is a tangential example of how powerful AI is. If I was a realtor, I could say, write me 10 tweets about the most expensive house in the neighborhood as a marketing concept, and it would just spit them out in 3 seconds. So I think that the Plus version, it definitely has a little more smarts, but it also has more tools. The biggest tool that we can come back to later if we want is called Code Interpreter. And that is almost another podcast worth of information, where you start to get towards multimodal GPT, where I could upload a file, I could upload an image, I could upload a video, and it can digest things more than just language. And that sort of thing, as you start to think 4 or 5 years from now, being able to give it any type of asset and have it bring back, it's totally unstructured asset, and have it be able to digest what's in that asset contextually, that's the difference between paying and free, I think, that power.
Well, that just leans back to what you both were originally talking about, was using it to repurpose information.
Mm-hmm.
And use that information in multiple ways. You guys have both hinted at this a little bit, so I do want to switch some. And, you know, the biggest worry, well, other than, you know, us olds who are like, it's going to take my jobs away, I think the other biggest worry, though, are what are our ethical rules? Are there standards and best practices in place, or what standards and best practices are kind of being developed now? I know you had said, Colin, you had talked about how your group decided not to use it as a way to rewrite news releases, but you're using it as a way to repurpose the original content you've already made. So that's a big decision. And I've talked to some other people who they say, well, they're kind of okay with repurposing a news release that way. How are you approaching those discussions to work out your guidelines?
So part of another one of my roles, I guess, in the world is I'm a chair of the ethics committee for the Radio Television Digital News Association, RTDNA. And, you know, about 6 months ago, give or take, you know, that organization was, boy, we really should have some guidelines around this, right? And it sounds like something the ethics committee should tackle. So I and a group of journalists started to kind of work through, okay, how do we even think about this? And as you point out, there are lots of different approaches here. There isn't sort of consensus on what is appropriate and what isn't appropriate. And so what we tried to do, and we created a set of guidelines that were published, I don't know, a month ago or so. And what they did, instead of telling journalists, well, you should do this or you shouldn't do this, it was more about, here are the things that you should be considering in developing your own guidelines for your company or your newsroom. And those things centered around accuracy, context, clarity. You know, that was one category of things. And we had a list of questions that people should be looking at as they work through things like ChatGPT. We talked a lot about transparency and disclosure. Like, when do you tell the audience that you're using this tool? What is the right way to do that? How do you build trust with your audience? And obviously, transparency is a really big component of that. And then another big topic there was privacy. The committee talked about, journalists having this longstanding practice of weighing an individual's right to privacy versus the public's right to know. And that's part of what we do as journalists on a daily basis, is try to balance those things. And we know that AI is probably going to struggle to understand that nuance in the world that we all live in. So what we did as an organization is said, look, you should have a standard, like either as a company or a newsroom, you should have some kind of policy that has been communicated to your team. Because without a policy, people could be using ChatGPT in their daily work today without any kind of guideline. And here are the things to think about. I think the other point that was really clear to us when we were discussing this was this stuff is going to evolve. It's going to evolve very rapidly. So expect these guidelines to change in the next 6 months and the next 2 years. There are going to be things that we aren't haven't considered that we should be considering. But I think, really it kind of comes down to sort of like core journalism principles, doesn't it? Right? How accurate are we being? Are we being clear with the audience? Are we being transparent with our consumers? How do we protect people's rights, but still, fulfill our mission, which is the public's right to know? So those are the types of things that we balanced and tried to come up with something that was valuable for journalists and journalism organizations to build their own plans.
I'm curious about your discussions of when and how to say we used an AI tool.
Yeah, that was really interesting because people had lots of different perspectives on that, because some people were like, well, you have to be transparent with the audience anytime it's used. And, then you start to look at the use case for that. Like, what does that really mean, right? So if I use it to do some of the things that I was talking about earlier within our organization, where we're using it as a tool to repurpose our original content, we're supposed to put a disclaimer in every television story or every television tease that we used as to come up with ideas about how to create a tease. I thought that was impractical and probably not necessary. So we looked at it and said, as an organization, be transparent with your audience in the broad sense, right? do a story where your news director is on television talking about how we use or don't use AI. Write a digital article that we can post to our website that explains how we use AI in our newsroom and what our standards are. So I think that transparency is important, but I also don't believe, you know, if we reach the threshold where the AI is creating the content without a journalist reviewing it, then I would say that absolutely needs to be transparent on every single story in which that is happening. But we have outlawed that practice. So our you know, in our newsrooms, we didn't feel it was necessary to sort of talk about that. So to us, it's like a background tool that we're using to create our content. But at the same time, our journalists, the individual journalist, him or herself, has the responsibility for the content that goes out to the consumer, right? Ultimately, it's their work. They're using a tool to craft their work. And so we felt, you know, sort of that general concept of transparency worked for us. But other people disagree.
Yeah, and I do like how you put it earlier about kind of, instead of here's the hard and fast guidelines, here are just some lenses to look through as you consider making your own. And to me, as you were talking, it reemphasizes to me the need for copy editors. You know, I come from the print world, so you know, the last 20 years we've cut a lot of copy editor jobs in the print world, but these tools are kind of reemphasizing the need for that, because you've got to review those things before it goes out.
I couldn't agree more. And there has to be a human reviewing the journalism work. Otherwise, I think we really potentially lose trust with our audience.
Ethan, do you have anything to add on to that and the lens of looking at these guys?
I think fundamentally I'm completely aligned. I think if I were to add to it, one thing that happens is that you discover, the more you talk about it, people start feeling comfortable admitting they're already using it, right? So if we start with what Colin said and just establish the baseline, it's not writing original work. It's not a ghostwriter. It's not cheating. But let's say you're using it to brainstorm, or let's say you use it to proofread. Like, before I submit my script to my boss, I'm going to run it through a chatbot and say, hey, I want you to beat me up for grammar. Did I do anything wrong? It's a pretty great proxy for spell check, grammar, readability. I could use it to just proofread, right? So as a collaboration tool, what I found is that the more I talk to people in any industry, people almost confess that, oh yeah, I love that. I used it for whatever. I had a transcript of a governor's speech and I ran it through ChatGPT and I asked it if there were any localization ideas. It's a partner for me. And so that to me is really interesting. Because we could have a policy as an organization, which we should, but then there's also just the tools that our individuals use. And I would use an analogy of an iPhone. For years, we had a policy that no reporter could shoot a television package with a phone, because there was just a bias against these, how dare you use a phone, right? And so one year, one of our employees quit and he approached me privately. And he said, hey, Ethan, I just want you to know that for the last 6 months, I've only used an iPhone and nobody knew. And he did that to kind of kick everyone in the pants to say, look, this is provincial. iPhones are, what, you know, 4K at this point. You can do a perfectly good television package with an iPhone. And so I think, you know, to Colin's point, AI is more than just ChatGPT. If I'm on my phone with an app and I want to remove the background from my picture and just have me, or even in Zoom, that's AI, right? It's artificially figuring out the background and it's deleting it. So I think it's just a tool. As long as you're having those baselines that it's not writing your work for you, it's not a ghostwriter, once you have it in that point of view, it's just a tool. And I think also the Collins point about you have to sign off on your own work, I can sniff out, I think, when people are being lazy on LinkedIn, for example. I'll have people message me on LinkedIn, and it's clearly a chatbot that they're using to try to gin up leads.
Right.
Are you going to NAB this year? I hope I get to see you. And then the more I reply, the more I realize, like, you're not even reading this. So I do feel that garbage in, garbage out, good work requires, you know, any kind of tool you can use to have good work is important, but it's no proxy for signing off on your own work. So I pretty much agree with everything Colin said, but I did, the big thing to add is that people are kind of using this without anyone knowing to help bolster themselves. And that's something that I think that's where it's hard to turn this new evolution off. If everyone's adopting it privately, it's just part of our fabric, right?
Right. Well, I think kind of one of the last things that I want to hit. So, okay, somebody's listening. They haven't started doing it. How do you start? How do you really start to initiate this and put it into your newsroom and in action? What's a good starting place?
Well, I think you have to have the foundation of, like, what's the framework of things that we find acceptable, that we find worthy of experimentation, right? You know, so you got to create the guidelines. I think you got to sort of think that through a little bit. The other part, the other next step, I think, is to just use it in your daily life. You know, as we've been discussing on this call, the people that they're starting to integrate it into what they do on a regular basis. So I think the more you play with it, the more you're going to figure it out, the more you're going to say, oh, you know what? This is the part of my job I really hate. I wonder if I could use this tool to make that more efficient, right? And get rid of that so I can spend time on the things that I really love. You know, that would be my best
counsel for me.
Yeah, exactly. That would be my best piece of advice. You know, try to just make the stuff you don't like doing on a daily basis a little bit easier to do.
Yeah, I would add to that. I really liked Colin's term, the coalition of the willing. I think at this point, if you haven't tried ChatGPT, that puts you in a bucket of either being not as technical or perhaps a little afraid or not knowing how to kick the tires. I would say find a friend and ask a lot of questions and sit down with them, because I believe my gut says most people have tried this if they're going to try it. And if they haven't by now, you should probably find someone who has, sit down with them and not be embarrassed to ask a lot of questions. Just get a mentor.
Don't be scared.
Yeah.
Well, okay. Speaking of that, if people want to make friends with either of you, how could they contact and, you know, reach out and ask you guys as experts, if you're willing?
Yeah, happy to talk with anybody about this. I've had a number of conversations recently about this topic. Easiest is probably just find me on LinkedIn. You know, Colin Benedict. That's a quick way. Don't use a chat bot to connect with me on LinkedIn. Otherwise, I'll probably dismiss it. But if you're authentic, happy to get back to you and talk with anybody about this.
Yeah, same. I've really enjoyed talking to people outside of the business. Have some friends in e-commerce or in the law, realtors. You know, I think it's such a fun topic for me. I never get tired of talking, and I'd be happy to speak about it with anyone. And I would say LinkedIn is also the best way. I'm Ethan Holland. You'll find me.
Well, I'm watching our clock here, and I want to be cognizant of everybody's time. But I do want to ask kind of this weird question, because this is all still new to me as well and new to everybody. Are there things for those that are trying to get started we haven't talked about that we should talk about? Is there some other information we should make sure gets out there?
You know, the other thing that I would raise, which is a little bit different than what you're asking, but I think is worthy of discussion, which is how is the public going to be using these tools, in some cases for good, in some cases not for good tactics? And what we've talked about in our organization is we have to have a much higher threshold in terms of believing things like images and video before we're willing to publish them. It's become so much easier for the public to create content that is fake, and so much easier for our newsrooms to potentially be the subject of you know, publishing something that just isn't true or real, that we have to talk about and recognize that the threshold, our own threshold for confirmation, needs to go up. So what happens, and I used, you know, Midjourney to create some images and then, you know, showed them to our team and just said, well, what happened if you got this image delivered via email into your newsroom, you know, email inbox that goes to everybody in the newsroom. And would you believe it? Or would you say, would you be skeptical of it? And, you know, I think we have to make sure that our journalists are raising the bar on that degree of skepticism in order to protect the public from false information.
That's going to be a hard bar to keep clearing, right?
I think it's going to continue to go up, right? But as more information becomes available to us faster and easier, doesn't mean it's quality information, right? That means our standards have to raise to protect the integrity of the news organization so that when people come to us, either via social media or our broadcasts or our digital stories on our website, that they can trust that the information that we're providing them is of value. And I think there's going to be more and more of a need for purveyors of truth in a world where it becomes easier and easier to create falsehoods. And so, you know, it's not an easy task, but I think it's something that we have to sort of talk about, you know, be open about and say, hey, what are we going to do about this? How do we do this? What's the process for vetting some of this stuff? And if we can talk about it more, I feel like that raises the bar for the consciousness of our teams to be really that skeptical journalist, which is required, I think, in this day and age.
Yeah, and I think just remembering that, like everything else, I mean, all of this stuff, the technology, our ethical discussions around it, everything's fluid.
I agree.
Well, guys, I appreciate you taking a little bit of time today just to help us dig in a little bit on what these tools are, how we can use them, how we can start using them if we're not already, and most importantly, go find a friend
and talk
this stuff out. I appreciate it. Thank you so much.
Yeah, thanks for having us.
Great to be here.
That will wrap us up for this episode. We'll talk to everybody next time. The News Nirvana podcast is available on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, or most any of your favorite podcast apps. The News Nirvana podcast is made possible by the generosity of Blox Digital. Connect with them at BloxDigital.com. The News Nirvana podcast is produced by Fredcasts. Think, speak, act.